Welcome to Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. Our team's goal is to present science-based information about gardening and all things nature in New York's Hudson Valley. Hosts Gene and Tim, along with team members Teresa and Linda, are master gardener volunteers for New York's Columbia and Greene counties. So if you're interested in gardening or nature or nuggets of information about what's happening outside your door, settle in. Enjoy the conversation. Whatever the season, we have something to say.
Hi, welcome to Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. Our guests today are Arva Berman-Merkin and Sarah Grinberg from Long Table Harvest. This is a great organization that gleans overstock from local farms and other food producers and redistributes it to local organizations. They're sharing with our neighbors in need. It is so cool. Welcome.
I'd like to add my welcome. I'm Annie Skabinski. Hi, Tim Kennelty.
Hey, Annie.
When I think about Long Table Harvest, they've been around for a while. So in addition to adding my welcome, I'd like to invite you to tell us about a little bit about your history. How did you come to Long Table Harvest, and what's your personal background with the organization?
Great. This is Arva, and I founded Long Table Harvest just about 8 years ago. And so, yeah, we're entering into our eighth season. I transitioned into running this organization after three seasons farming in the Hudson Valley. Prior to that, I had worked with a nonprofit involved in agriculture also in the Hudson Valley. So I had a fair amount of knowledge of this region as well as experience on the ground farming. And, you know, part of my dream was to start a farm, and there's a lot of barriers to doing that. So it became clear to me that that wasn't necessarily possible for my future. And so I pivoted and saw such abundance on the farms that I was working on and neighboring farms as well. Personally, so my family comes from the former Soviet Union. My parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents all immigrated. So while I have not like personally experienced food scarcity, it was very much their experience. A lived experience, and that was transmitted to me, whether or not that was something that I personally experienced. So when I was working on farms and witnessing the amount of food that was actually left in the field, not because of the farmer's negligence, but there's a lot of reasons. There's insurance policies that they need to have to ensure that they can meet their financial goals every year as they always grow more. There's pests, diseases, weather, things like that that can get in the way. So there's always going to be extra if you're trying to run your business well. And so I sort of had a reckoning moment of seeing that abundance in the first radish harvest that we ever did and how many we left in the field. And so I kind of filed that away in the back of my mind while I was farming. And so when it came time to create Long Table Harvest as an organization, I use that resource as the primary component to then create the organization. So not only the farms that I was working on had such abundance, but many farms in this region did. And so I approached the ones that I was connected to, and they were very much on board. Some farms were already donating to food pantries and were happy to have us do that work. And some had wanted to, but didn't necessarily have the time or the energy. And so, you know, we were that vehicle for making those connections. When we founded, there was another individual involved, Laura Engelman, and she was sort of working on the ground in Hudson with Greater Hudson Promise Neighborhood, was connected to some organizations on the ground there who could receive the produce that I was putting together. And yeah, it was sort of like this perfect marriage of the abundance on the farms that I had built out a network of, and also Laura having some connections. And then we had to sort of build greater connections around Columbia County. So our first year, we distributed produce just around Columbia County. Since then, we've expanded into Dutchess County. And then we're aiming for this next year to, while we have been working in Greene County unofficially, we're looking to build out a more robust distribution there.
Great. We have lots more to ask you, Sarah. What about you?
Yeah, sure. So I'm going into my second year as gleaning coordinator for Long Table, although I'd known about Long Table for much longer. few years ago, I met Arava while I was working at Rolling Grocer, which is a great tiered price grocery store in Hudson. And, you know, we were working together there. Before that, I had farmed for a season here in the Hudson Valley, owned my own business here in the Hudson Valley. And then before that, we have this whole decade of like tech work that, while relevant, we don't need to talk about anymore. But I was just really attracted to the very simple and effective work that Longtable was doing. I think we see a lot of well-meaning organizations that kind of start out, that end up with incredibly complex or complicated structures. And what really appealed to me about Longtable is that Arava and everyone that started this up just saw abundance and need and connects those. And it's very simple and you can do a lot with just that concept and with just one van and, you know, a lot of, and some good connections. So I really appreciated that. I'd done a little work with more global food system consulting stuff, which sounded really interesting and cool. And then I realized was just reading data and typing up reports 10,000 miles away or whatever from anyone that's affected and probably something that would never have real impact. So doing work with Longtable, where you're physically picking up the produce and dropping it off with people that need it and can share it with the community, was incredibly appealing. I had the luxury of being a recipient, one of the organizations. I started the Athens Community Farm here over in Athens in 2021 with some of our neighbors. And we were lucky enough to be recipients of seedlings from the seedling program, which we will talk about, I know. So working with that current gleaning coordinator, Leah, and when the role opened up, I was just really excited to have the opportunity to jump in.
So I have this visual of you out in the fields, like picking up those acorn squashes that nobody picked. But that the more modern version of it is that the farmers are actually putting aside vegetables and things like that for you that they know you're going to come and pick up. It's something a little bit beyond my basket in the field concept, right?
People definitely do that. And depending on where you are in each state, it kind of makes sense based on your agricultural makeup. So for us, we work with a lot of small and medium-sized farms. There's not a lot of orchards that we're working with. The bigger farms and the orchards are where it's really easy to go in the field and glean. And then you also really need to have a city nearby or a larger center to get that food out immediately. We're working in a rural area. So it's better for us to have a large variety of different kinds of food, which is what we end up getting, rather than if you glean, you usually get one or two crops and you get a lot of those crops. We get a really nice assortment and then we bring that to over 30 sites.
We all got to know each other through the farms when I volunteered at Hardy Roots and now through the Ghent Food Pantry connection that we have. I just want to say our clients at the pantry are very, very grateful. In follow-up to that, do you hear from other pantries? Do folks come in certain times of the week knowing that the fresh veggies will be there?
Sure. I think what we found is that people are most excited about produce that they have a relationship with already. It's always exciting to bring a crate of something no one's ever seen before, and people can poke around and take one or two pieces of kohlrabi home or something like that. But what people really want is what they are comfortable seeing, what they've cooked before or what their family has cooked for them. And of course, depending on who that is and where you are, that's an incredibly diverse array of vegetables. And so, you know, that's why, you know, going back to what Arava said, like having diversity is really key for us. But what we see, what people want typically are carrots, potatoes, onions, collards, and they can get excited about plenty of things and purple top turnips and rutabaga sometimes. And, you know, because they have a personal attachment to that. And something that is really great about the way that Longtable operates is that the gleaning coordinator has the chance to develop relationships with each one of our distribution sites, along with our farm partners, of course, too. But so with the sites so that we know what each pantry or community organization wants, what the people that go there are actually looking for, and then to the best of our ability can match that with what we're taking. You know, we might find that there's a place in Millbrook or something that really loves lettuce and tomatoes as much as they can get all the time. and then somewhere in Hudson or out in Philmont that really wants turnips, collards, something like that. And depending on the season, of course, we can cater to that. And it somehow works out every week where everything goes to a place that needs it. There's sometimes on that in the middle of the day on a Tuesday where the van is full to capacity and I kind of turn around and can't imagine we'll find a space for all of it. But by 5 o'clock, that van is empty and everyone's always really excited. And it's great to see that go. And the farmers too are always incredibly fulfilled in a way to see that this produce gets used because a lot of work goes into growing it.
And on a weekly basis, what does it look like in terms of variety? I know when I belong to a CSA, there's maybe 5 different vegetables or selections. What are you generally seeing in terms of distribution on a weekly basis?
Yeah, definitely. And Arva, please jump in anytime. I know I'm stepping in here. But I would say at least over my last season, we probably see 20 to 30 varieties of things, if not more, coming through the van every day. We operate on Mondays and Tuesdays, and we're getting a lot of market excess. So it's, you know, first good quality items, just a day, you know, things that didn't sell or didn't make it into a CSA share. But that's across, you know, up to 30 different farms. So if one farm is giving you, you know, 5 different things, while you might find similar things at other farms, you're probably getting a different variety at each one. So yeah, I would say, you know, up to 20 to 30 different items. In our peak months, which are August and September, we get over 2,000 pounds a day of vegetables, which is pretty cool. And I think I did a quick numbers check. We had over 80 different varieties of produce come through in the last year.
We get ours on Monday, and we share with the Chatham Pantry on Tuesday mornings.
And I know Annie's a big baker and cook. I'm a baker, but I got kohlrabi one week at RCSA, and I thought, what do I do with kohlrabi? Do you have recipes that you give to folks when you have something that might be a little bit unusual or even some kind of vegetable that people don't usually cook? Is that part of, in terms of how you prepare these different vegetables, is that part of what, you know, people expect?
Yeah, we've tried that out in the past. It seems like some folks are interested in that again, but generally we don't really interface with the pantry guests. So, you know, our job is mostly just to drop the food off. And if there's additional support that we're asked of, we're happy to provide those resources.
The regional food bank that we work with does offer educational courses and they offer recipes and resources too. But one of the dynamics of the pantry is that we don't have a critical mass of people there at any given time. So we haven't been able to do something formal like hold a class. We're much more likely to pass out recipes. And we've also found that labeling the items, particularly those that look similar, induce people to give it a try.
So I love this, that we have both the pantry folks and the gleaners at the same table today. So that's really great. But let me just ask, is there any kind of government regulation of this? Are there standards, or do you basically take what the farmers have and you distribute it?
Yeah, pretty much the latter. We don't interface with the government. We rely on the the Good Samaritan Act, which basically protects us in the event that someone were to get sick from the food we donated. It stipulates that as long as we donate in good faith, knowing that the food is of a good quality, then that protects our organization. We've never had any issues with that to our knowledge. So yeah, that's the extent of regulation. But internally, we're very much focused on quality control and we want to maintain a certain level of first is a sort of term in agriculture, first or second.
I want to talk a little bit about the flip side. You're talking about all the good work you do, but you still have expenses.
Yeah.
Would you, one of you, spend a couple of minutes talking about how you receive funding and how people can contribute to your success? That would be great.
Yeah. We fundraise all year long. That's my primary role outside of supporting Sarah and doing the logistics and planning on the back end. We fundraise from a variety of places. There's individuals, there's foundations, there's a state grant that we receive. Some of the food pantries support us. We're trying to build out a monthly donor network. That is sort of a long-term goal that we're looking to make more robust. So individuals sign up to donate. It just automatically draws from their credit card or PayPal. account. It can be as small as $5 a month, but having that consistent income, especially from individuals in our community, we feel like is the sort of future of our sustainability, because priorities of foundations can shift, state funding can shift, obviously everything can shift. But when you have locals, people who live here are invested in seeing equity throughout this area, and with the growing disparity, it's becoming more and more of an issue. And I can talk about that more, but we think that individual investment is really a priority. And so if anyone is wanting to ever donate to us, they can go to our website. It's longtableharvest.org. There's a donate button, and it's really easy to either make a one-time donation or sign up monthly.
And we'll include all of that in our show notes too. So if you're going to our website to listen to the podcast, we'll have all that information for folks. And I really encourage you to go and take a look. This is a great organization. I understand that from a gardener's point of view, from somebody who's gardening like me, you have a seedling program too. Tell us about that, because that's kind of exciting to get people really growing the food as well.
Yeah, the seedling program started in 2020. And Arva, feel free to fill in any gaps here, because I didn't come around until last year. But it was started by the current gleaning coordinator, Leah. And it was really a pandemic response. From what I understand, we just started seeing that people didn't just need produce, because the volume of produce coming through was so inconsistent potentially, and no one was really felt secure that they had a constant supply, that people were starting to grow their own food and were much more interested in being self-sufficient in that respect. At the same time, there were farms, growers interested in that had excess seedlings in the same way that they had excess produce. And if you've seen a greenhouse, you know, kind of after planting, you'll notice there's half trays, quarter trays left of almost anything as it goes in, because in the same way that you have to grow more than you need, you know, you have to plant more than you need, because you never know what's going to happen between putting the seed in the soil and getting it into the dirt. So, you know, Leah just started collecting excess, and then certain farms or growers would grow specifically for us, grow seedlings that they knew our kind of growing partners would be interested in, or the community organizations would be interested in. And we partnered with community gardens, groups like Grow Black Hudson and Hudson, that help individual families and households build their own vegetable patches in their backyards or front yards, or, you know, wherever you can grow, boxes on a porch kind of thing. So we've done that for three seasons now. And I think 75,000 individual plants have been shared out through that, which is pretty amazing.
It is a really cool idea.
And, you know, what we found this year was that the pantries were a great resource for people to pick up seedlings. Kind of the seedling program starts in April, so it's almost 2 months before we're really getting vegetables in that we can share. And so this is a really great way to support our pantry network early, and that patrons of these pantries were really interested in getting these.
It was really, really well received. We talked about the produce itself, and now we've talked about the seedlings, but I know you've contacted the pantries at other times of the year with other products. Do you want to talk about meat and cheese?
Yeah, sure. So produce is predominantly what we share during the growing season. But we also are lucky enough that we partner with dairy farms and meat producers, so that when they have an excess, they'll reach out to us and let us know, you know, hey, I have a whole steer coming through, or, you know, I have 500 pounds of chicken that we would like to donate. And that's usually, again, not as regular. You know, they'll just call us in, and then I can go around, or Arva can call around and see who needs it. And, you know, we use our same van and pack those crates full of frozen meat or dairy, milk and stuff too. So whatever it is, and wherever we can find it, a good home. You know, it follows the same concept that there's excess of high quality, safe, healthy, local product that just need to find a home. And that's what the support we can give.
So let me just ask, is there like a slow time for you? I mean, in the winter time, are you still getting some kind of cool root vegetables? What's happening in the winter months?
Yeah, we definitely do get, I would say, a lot of our meat donations throughout the off time or the non-growing season. Sometimes dairy donations would come through at that time. We may get roots, you know, sort of at the end of winter if farmers have their cooler still full and they want to just clear it out for the new season. But it's the busy season in that it's fundraising time. So there is a flip that's happening. It used to be that I could do the bulk of my fundraising in the off season, but now it's pretty much a year round thing that I'm doing.
You mentioned that, Sarah. I think you mentioned that you met at the Rolling Grocer, and I know that you founded it. Would you give them a plug as long as we're talking?
Sure. Yeah. I myself and other individuals from Hawthorne Valley Association and residents in the city of Hudson met for 2 years to sort of develop the vision for a nonprofit grocery store, which opened in, I believe, 2019. There's a tiered pricing system. It's really cool. So people pay based on their financial situation. They self-select into whatever tier that they want. To my knowledge, I don't know of any other grocery stores like that. It was really unique in its development. And I stepped back at the end of 2020 and, you know, they're still in Hudson and still kicking.
And what's the name of this and where are they?
Yeah, it's Rolling Grocer 19 and it's on South 2nd Street in Hudson, New York.
You mentioned a further or more formalized expansion into Greene County as part of the growth. If an organization isn't connected with you and would really like to be involved, can you explain how to get in touch, either as a giver or as a recipient?
Sure. We're always open to people reaching out to us. They're welcome to email Sarah, S-A-R-A-H, at longtableharvest.org. Then and I can connect and we can set up some time to talk. Yeah, we're really excited for some expansion in Greene County. We've been doing some work in Catskill, Athens, and just, you know, hoping to formalize that and the first part of that. And then, you know, Arv is doing a lot of fundraising in the off season and grant applications and so much of that. And what I'm doing is, you know, making those connections now, pantries, farms, doing outreach, that to kind of set up things for the spring. So anyone interested that's listening, you know, please reach out.
So what else should we know about what you do?
I think I would want to share that. So I put together a 7-year report at the end of last year, taking stock of, you know, what has transpired and a lot of things that have transpired, as we know, over the last 7 years. But when I started this work, yeah, I couldn't have imagined, you know, what future was to come and naively sort of believed that providing this service would somehow maybe change things on a larger level. And I know now, and I have known for quite some time, that, you know, there's a lot of greater systems at play that make food pantries necessary, that make it such that people need to go there to get their food. And so that's sort of the other reality that kind of looms in the back, which is that people are not making enough money to meet their basic needs, with minimum wage not being in line with what cost of living actually is. And so the pandemic really exacerbated that and brought all of that, which was sort of looming and normalized, to the fore. And so we've seen, and I'm sure Annie can attest to this, demand very much increase at all of the sites we work with. And even in the last year, with inflation going up so high, demand is increasing even more. So in the last 7 years, we're not seeing anything change. And obviously, I think if we see big changes on the systemic level, then the challenge of accessing food can start to actually alleviate. But until that happens, we're just seeing people having to come together of their own volition to support neighbors in their community. And while I love that, you know, we can do that, and there's a lot of other people in our community doing that, it's really sort of a band-aid solution. And, you know, and it's the best case in a worst case scenario. But that's sort of the really painful reality of doing this work. While it's lovely to provide high quality food to folks who otherwise might not be able to pay for it, greater issues that are creating that to be our reality.
So I'm going to ask you my hope question, because I'm this corny person who asks at the end of all of our episodes, what gives you hope? And obviously you're doing a lot of great things, but what gives you hope when you go in every day and you're working on this project?
I mean, I just have to say that, like, what gives me hope, at least in the work that we do, is just that, while we don't want everyone to have to rely on the generosity of and time of their neighbors, like, everywhere I go, people are there and people are excited to help. The capacity and the desire to put time into community is abundant. And you could be seeing that kind of fall away or people getting disheartened and thinking that the smaller things don't matter, but it's not. From my perspective, it's not. And I'm excited to continue supporting that in whatever capacity that I can and we can with what we have.
So I'm just going to say the two of you and Annie, you're doing such great work. And I never use this word, but this is kind of a really awesome program. I just love it. Thank you so much for coming today. And thank you so much for what you contribute to the community. We've really enjoyed talking to you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, I'd like to thank you both. And I really do hope that people contribute, get involved, because they've heard of this. We really appreciate you taking your time to come in and talk to us today. Take care.
That concludes another episode of Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. We would like to thank Sandra Linnell and Devin Connolly from Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties for production support. And a special thank you to our listeners for joining us on this episode of Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. You can find links to any of the topics mentioned in this episode at our website at ccecolumbiagreen.org. Comments and suggestions for future topics may be directed to us at columbiagreenmgb@cornell.edu or on the CCE Master Gardener Volunteers of Columbia and Greene Counties Facebook page. For more information about Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties, visit our website at ccecolumbiagreen.org or visit us in Hudson or in Acre. Cornell Cooperative Extension provides equal programming and employment opportunities.